Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus. We trust you had a great Christmas, and Jim, I hope you did as well.
I did, Greg.
Well, if you weren't with us on Friday, we began our end-of-the-year awards, McLaughlin-style. Imagine us yelling at each other and wearing nice clothes and, I guess, still having three martinis every day, so some things never change. Jim, we start this time on the road to stardom. Which political figure do you see highly on the rise right now?
Great question. A lot of good nominees. I'm going to make someone who folks may not have heard of, but I have a feeling you will. In fact, you probably should have heard of him by now. Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who was elected in 2009 as part of this kind of McDonnell wave. Cuccinelli was the one who kind of had the Washington Post editors breaking out in hives. He was, you know, it was a fairly conservative ticket, but Cuccinelli was seen as the crazy right-wing Christian extremist. In office, he has undoubtedly, you know, been a tough fighter in the job, but I think most prominently leading the fight against Obamacare. And you know, very early on, when I think a lot of folks thought the legal challenge against the constitutionality of Obamacare was kind of a perhaps a chaotic effort, you know, kind of not really clear on the chances of success. Clearly, in the past year, we have seen this advancing through the courts, and more folks find the idea of five Supreme Court justices ruling that the government does not have the authority to make you buy health insurance from a private company increasingly plausible. And so, obviously, if Cuccinelli were to win that, he would become a hero to the right, deservedly so. And earlier this month, he announced that he is running for governor of Virginia in 2011. As we all know, my home state has this bizarre rule in which governors are limited to one term. You are a lame duck the moment you are sworn into office. And so Bob McDonnell will not be running. The expectation had been that Bill Bowling, lieutenant governor, would also run. But I think Cuccinelli is way ahead in the very tentative polls they've taken so far. Cuccinelli is a guy who is ambitious and smart and driven and capable of getting results. So I would say keep your eyes on this guy. In addition to being a future governor, I think the future is very bright for him. Who knows what post he could achieve someday in the future.
Yeah, I think that's true. I've heard him speak a number of times. He's very good. He is probably even a little bit more conservative than Governor McDonnell, so we'll see who he ends up against. Rumor has it Terry McAuliffe wants to run again, so it'll be great to have to listen to him every day. On my side of this issue, the road to stardom, another guy who's doing a lot behind the scenes. This is up on Capitol Hill. Freshman senator from Utah, Mike Lee, took down a three-term incumbent Bob Bennett at the Republican convention in Utah in 2010. That was kind of a big surprise there. And he's come to Washington and really remained the leader of the Tea Party movement. He came up with the most sensible, balanced budget amendment proposal. Obviously, it didn't happen given the numbers in Congress, but he wasn't just happy to see revenues not being exceeded by expenditures. He actually wanted spending capped at a specific percentage of GDP. And I know there's a whole bunch of different opinions on the balanced budget amendment in general, but this is a guy who has not turned to mush since coming to Washington and is still a strong leader and a guy who I think, along with Marco Rubio and Ron Johnson, another member that's a freshman class in the Senate, if they can get a chance to get in the majority after 2012, expect some great things from them.
Good choice, Greg.
On the road to oblivion, the exact opposite, Jim, who do you have top in the list this year?
I'm going to make a nominee I think a lot of people will not like, but I got to call him as I see him. Call me cynical, but I have a feeling that within a couple of years, we're going to look back on Herman Cain's time as frontrunner and ask ourselves, what was that all about? This is a guy who obviously had his a fairly quick rise and fairly quick decline as a presidential candidate. Withdrew from the race not too long ago. Obviously had the issue of allegations of sexual misconduct, some accusations of harassment that were kind of he said, she said. Then the Ginger White came along. I think more than even that stuff, which I think kind of did unnerve a certain number of his supporters. There was just a devastating interaction with the editors of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we all know how early Wisconsin is in the GOP primary process. In which allegedly the word from his camp was that he was taken out of context. Now, the entire interview was like 20 minutes, and they posted all of it. So how a 20-minute thing can be taken out of context is beyond me. Then the explanation was that he was tired, and I can understand running for president is a tiring and exhausting enterprise. It feels like a marathon. But hey, you know what? If you're too tired to give coherent answers, don't do the interview. You kind of have a responsibility to do that as a candidate, to not walk around groggy and half asleep and such. I don't want to be seen as picking on Herman Cain. I think he's an impressive man and in some ways a great American success story. He was just a guy who was not ready to be president of the United States, and I have a sneaking suspicion that he'd be very happy in some other role, perhaps as a Fox News Channel host. So maybe he will pursue that path, and we'll be watching the Herman Cain show a year from now or something like that. But I just had this feeling this was a guy who perhaps the most unlikely Republican frontrunner in history was former Godfather's Pizza executive CEO. And kind of, you know, it's wonderful. It kind of shows the volatility of the year, but I wouldn't be surprised if Herman Cain never went anywhere near running for office again and, you know, returned to a much less prominent role on the pundit, talking head, speech-giving, book-writing, column-writing world, which is nothing wrong with any of that as somebody who does a bunch of those things. Just I don't think the hot prospect of President Cain will come along anytime soon.
I think this was it, given the reasons why he left the race. I think it'd be very unlikely that he joins again. Plus, he's pushing 70 years old, and we all know that's kind of a demarcation line when it comes to running for an office that demanding. On mine, I chose New York Congressman, now former Congressman, Anthony Weiner, who was an aide to Chuck Schumer. And when Chuck Schumer won the Senate seat in New York in 1998, Weiner ran for Schumer's old House seat, won it easily every year through 2010, was basically a bomb thrower of the first order for the Democratic side. And then all of a sudden, we learn about this Twitter scandal where he's exchanging lewd photos with random women around the country. He's pretty sure most of them were over 18. And the next thing you know, despite his efforts to stay in office, Nancy Pelosi and everybody else in the leadership basically tells him they don't want him back. He goes away. Finally, Republicans win the most unlikely of special elections. And we haven't heard a peep from Anthony Weiner publicly since. That's not to say, given his boisterousness, that we won't hear anything from him ever again. But his supposed meteoric rise in New York politics has been stunted and probably won't be getting back up to where it was anytime soon.
Greg, I have to salute you for not a single double entendre in that entire description there.
We do what we can. We do what we can. On to the somber side now, one that unfortunately we need to deal with just about every year because these things happen. Sorry to see you go, Jim.
Yeah, I can try to be a little slightly lighthearted here and observe that in honor of how often I do an Andy Rooney impression, I should submit Andy Rooney. I'm going to go with a very obvious choice, though, and it's kind of an observation of how you come to appreciate someone often after they're gone. I was not a huge follower of Steve Jobs until his sudden passing. Didn't know that much about him, didn't consider myself somebody who followed Silicon Valley and tech tech things. The Isaacson biography is being read by both my mother and my brother right now. My brother usually does not read stuff like this. And it's a fascinating portrait of a fascinating man who I think was in many ways, you know, a double-sided coin. He apparently could be quite persnickety and irritable and you know, difficult and belittling of people he did not consider to be up to snuff. But almost everyone who worked for him said that he brought out the best in them, that he pushed them to put out the very best that they could do. And so everyone was very, very proud of what they achieved with him. So I think Steve Jobs, when he passed away, I described him as the closest thing that real life has generated to Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Man from the comics. I mean, he kind of was this mad genius. So every couple of years came out with something that you're like, huh, what? Why would we need something that would, you know, store a bazillion songs? Or why would we need something that's sort of like surfing the net, but in a little tablet form? And yet somehow they turn into these things that you have to have, and they become these objects that really do change the way Americans deal with their lives. So Steve Jobs, one of those guys whose impact you don't quite recognize until he's gone. And you wonder that if he had had a longer life, what kind of ideas and innovations and you know, inventions he would have helped generate. So Steve Jobs will be missed. You kind of wonder who the next Steve Jobs will be. I bet you he's tinkering in a garage somewhere. And it kind of shows you that great American success stories can still happen, even in a world that is changing very rapidly.
On mine, Jim, I have a little bit of a twofer. One of the things that has kind of slipped away now since it's been about 20 years since the Cold War is just how repressive the Soviet Union was. And no one was more emblematic of that than Andrei Sakharov, who died a number of years ago. But his wife, Elena Bonner, who also suffered through that with him, passed away this year. They were heroes to many Americans. President Reagan cited them constantly as people who stood up for what was right and yearned for freedom and weren't ready to just sit back and take it from the Soviets at that time. And ultimately, a lot of other people agreed with them, and ultimately the Iron Curtain came down. And just One other one real quickly, since I had the opportunity to interview him a number of years ago when he was only 106. Frank Buckles, the last World War I veteran, died earlier this year at the age of 110. The last doughboy, definitely a moment in American history where that generation is now gone. Yet their sacrifices obviously should never be forgotten, and I'm sure they won't be. Rest in peace, all.
Two good choices, Greg.
On that note, we'll join you again tomorrow with our latest round of McLaughlin-style awards. We'll be a little more chipper with those, hopefully. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Everyone who's feeling a little down from this one, worse scandals tomorrow, folks. So get ready. It'll be fun.
Exactly. A few more fireworks on the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch this week. For Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the next Three Martini Lunch.